big show for you here today. We preview the holiday slate. We've got three Christmas games to talk about. We've got two Saturday games to preview. We're going to jump into those games. Man, a lot of bizarre storylines here. We've got a Commanders team going against the Cowboys. Commanders, who's playing quarterback for them? Cowboys should be able to get whatever they want when they're on the ball. We've got the Lions going against the Vikings team with the backup quarterback. We got the Chiefs with the backup quarterback. We got the Ravens and Packers, maybe backup quarterback. A lot of strange quarterback situations, but we are going to give you everything you need to know heading into this slate of games. All that and more coming up with Ray Garvin. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that. It is our guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, you look absolutely fantastic today. What's going on, buddy?
I'm trying to be in the holiday spirit here. I want to be in the holiday spirit. Matt, we've got a few weeks in this NFL season left. Christmas is around the corner, but there's some comments. The Grinch is about to come out. Scrooge is about to come out as we start this data dump show. So you know what? It's the end of the season. It's week 17. For majority of the people out there, your season is over. It's a wrap. You're here because you love what we do. You entertain. You have fun. Oh, but we're gonna talk about it today, Matt. We're going to talk about it because the Grinch is here and people are saying, I stole Christmas. It wasn't me. I didn't steal any damn Christmas. But we'll talk about it, Matt. I'm feeling good, baby.
I'm glad you're feeling good. And I, like I said, you're looking good for the audio listeners. Ray has his usual cowboy hat on. He has his red blazer here today, completely outshining me when it comes to the Christmas attire. I have the Griswold & Co. family Christmas tree farm. Shout out to Christmas Vacation, the undisputed best Christmas movie that you can watch. Don't care. I've seen it 25,000 times. It still hits. I quote it all year long. Is what it is. So, yeah, Ray is outshining me when it comes to the Christmas attire, but I do like the sweater I've got here in terms of the Griswold family Christmas
nice sweater.
Tree
nice
farm. Sweater. And yet, Ray brings this up. We got something to talk about. We have something to address at the top of the show. Ray, we need to chat about this because yesterday on the live stream with Justin Boone, we got a comment from one of our loyal viewers here at X4. So number, bunch of numbers, you know, whatever. Anyways. They were saying, where is the guy in the cowboy hat that said to bench Ashton Jeanty? Look, I will say, I don't put this on just Ray. I was right along with the take. I already owned up to it on yesterday's show. But Ray, Ashton Jeanty didn't have the best game of his fantasy football season in week 16. He just had his second best, his one of two games over 30 points this year. That's what he dropped when you and I were sitting here saying, you can't play this guy against the Texans defense. What do you have to say for us, ourselves here?
First and foremost, what an incredible performance. Jeanty dominated. 128 yards, one catch, 60 yards, two total touchdowns. And you know what, Matt? The process says, you know, I do the same damn thing all over again. I do the same thing. If you're going to tell me he was going to go out there and do that versus the number one rated defense in the NFL, then by golly, then that's what it is, right? Like, that's just what it is. He caught one pass for 60 yards. Wasn't like he got peppered with targets. It wasn't. The touchdown run against Houston, incredible cutback run, and he got the volume. But anybody out there acting like this was a locked and loaded, you are playing him, no doubt about it, you're a damn liar. And speaking of Ashton Jeanty, since you and I both suggested that you may not want to play him, I went back, Matt. I think at the beginning of the show, the very first person we talked about was the QB1 on the week in Trevor Lawrence. Difficult matchup, didn't matter. T-Law went out there and got it done for you. I also think that you, my friend, brought up a certain DJ, and I'm not talking about in the club. I'm talking about DJ Moore. You talked about him. He delivered for you last week. And then just to end the show, because, you know, I do watch the Dallas Cowboys. I told you, Matt, ain't no fear. Justin Herbert is here. Get right game for Justin Herbert. By golly, old GQ told you that was going to happen. Top five quarterback on the week. And then just to put a cherry on top of the data dump cake from week 15, Justin Jefferson, you can't play him. You can't fool with Jefferson. He went out there and got you 6 for 85 if you had to put him out there. So listen, yes, we were wrong about Ashton Jeanty. We were wrong about Ashton Jeanty, but we weren't the only people wrong about him. But goddamn, Matt, we were right about a lot last week.
We sure were. And yeah, definitely shout out to you about the Justin Herbert, you know, talking point, because that was the first thing that kind of started pushing me in the direction of playing Justin Herbert in one of my matchups this week. He gave us one of the best, literally one of the best quarterback performances of the year based on EPA per dropback. So shout out to you for being right on that. The only problem is, Ray, I played him against somebody who was playing Ashton Jeanty over the weekend. So, you know, all my I was beaten by my own bad take. So, you know, listen, that's the job, man. You're going to get some right. You're going to get a lot more wrong. And we keep on trudging here, because at the end of the day, this is a small sample size sport. It's a 1 week sample. If Jeanty plays that Texans defense 100 times, maybe he only has that game 5% of the time, and 95% of the time he doesn't. But all that matters is here in this world, in this multiverse, he had that game and he propelled anyone who was brave enough to play him. Shout out to you all, except the person who did it against me. No shout out to them. No shout out to them. That my feelings are hurt. Shout out to you guys. You moved on to the next week. For everybody else, you're regretting if you put him on your bench. But we have a lot to talk about on today's show, hopefully helping people that are still alive in their fantasy football championships move on and get that trophy in their bag. And for those who are just, you know, maybe doing a little bit of DFS, a little prop betting, we're going to talk about some of that today as well, because what we're doing on today's show, it's not the usual data dump. It is actually just a preview of the Christmas Day games and the two Saturday games. So we've got 5 games to talk through here. It is going to be a big show. So let's get right into it. And let's start with the first game on Christmas. It is a Netflix game. It is Cowboys at Commanders at 1 p.m. Eastern. The Cowboys are 7-point road favorites, according to BetMGM. We got a pretty beefy 50.5 total here. Let's start with your Dallas Cowboys, Ray Garvin, when they have the football. And this is definitely going to be a more fun conversation when we flip the page of the Commanders, because as of right now, 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, they don't even know who's going to be starting a quarterback there. So that will be an interesting discussion. But we know what's going on with Dallas. What do you got your eye on when this team has the ball?
Yeah, when they have the ball, they're going up against one of the worst defenses in the NFL. I mean, the Washington Commanders defense, whether it's running the ball against them or throwing the ball, they are susceptible to it all. You've got one of the best offenses in the NFL, led by one of the best quarterbacks this season in Dak Prescott. Jerry Jones and the Cowboys have already come out to say, yeah, Dak is playing down to the end. We want to win on Christmas Day. So there is no fear or concern about the Cowboys maybe not playing their guys down the stretch. No. They're all playing. They've got 2,000-yard receivers right now with George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb. Dak Prescott playing really good football. The offensive front is banged up. The offensive line for Dallas, they had to put the left guard, Tyler Smith, at left tackle. They got Cooper Beebe back. Still some issues on the right side. And the running game with Javonte Williams didn't quite look 100% last week, in my opinion. But when they have the ball, Matt, I think they should be able to do whatever they want with the Washington Commanders. It feels like a really, really good spot for George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb. And as we're recording this today on Tuesday, Ryan Flournoy, who caught a touchdown, had another touchdown that was called back due to penalty. He was limited in practice today. So I bring his name up not because you're going to want to start him, but if he's off the field, that means even more opportunity funneling in the direction of CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. And that's exactly what you want in a matchup that's got a 50.5 point total. That's crazy this late in the season for as banged up as Washington is. I love this for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think especially it's really good if there's no Ryan Flournoy, who has, you know, impressed me this season. We've been talking about that on the show lately. I think that really stands out for a guy like CeeDee Lamb, because, you know, their roles sort of overlap a little bit here, where not obviously not in terms of target allocation, but where they're running routes from, where they're playing on the field. Flournoy this season has played in the slot on 33.7% of his snaps. CeeDee Lamb has been in the slot on 36.7%. George Pickens just 7.9%. Pickens, it was so funny, even last week going into that Chargers game, there was some talk from the coaching staff, we're going to move George Pickens around. Like we can't have him have that a game that he's been having lately. We got to get him rolling. No, they're never going to do that. He just plays X receiver. He plays in the slot the fewest of any starting receiver in the NFL, does George Pickens. I mean, he is just ISO X. So it's kind of the overlap in terms of role. If we're taking away Flournoy, I think that pushes even more in the direction of CeeDee Lamb, because what you're putting then at that point, you know, Kevontae Turpin out there. That just is not the same. That's just not the same.
No. And they're not getting a lot from Jake Ferguson of late either. So that tight end position, which was a really fruitful role at one point in time for all of us in fantasy, really hadn't felt that way with Jake Ferguson of late. Not very good after the catch. Some things need to happen with him in that position in the offseason. But if Flournoy is out of this one, and again, Matt, I really don't have a lean. I saw a picture of him from practice today. Huge knee brace on. He was working off to the side with the rehab group. Just another one to monitor. It's not going to impact the decision that you make to play Lamb or George Pickens. They're in your lineup. But if Flournoy is out, maybe you can raise that expectation level a little bit that you have for those pass catchers in Dallas.
Let's talk about the run game here real quick, because Javonte Williams probably coming off his first real letdown game in a while. It was unfortunate, obviously, if he ended up getting you bounced from your fantasy football semifinals, because he's been one of the best picks that you could have made. But Ray, I think you have a stat here from the Commanders defense. I mean, they have just been, we're going to talk about the passing game and where you can beat them. Spoiler alert, it's everywhere. But this is definitely a defense you can also run on as well.
Yeah, you can absolutely run on Washington. They're not good up front. Their linebacking core is not very solid. Again, I'm not looking at Dallas's offensive line as it's anything special, but this Commanders defense, they give it up. Matt, what is this number that we have right here for the Commanders? How much they allow since week 12? Allow 150 yards per game on the ground. Yeah, that's third most in the NFL over the last month plus of the season. This is a great spot for Javonte. I hope that he is healthy. They did not use him a lot versus the Chargers. He took, what, 9 carries in that game. And in one of the receptions, or maybe it was an incomplete pass, was right in the middle of the field. He went down, and you can tell whatever was ailing him, he re-injured it. He got up slow. He was off of the field. This should be a really good spot for him. You're probably just going to have to play and pray, Matt. Play and pray that he's okay and healthy enough to score you some points, because the matchup is good, but he is clearly less than 100% right now.
In the passing game, any way you want it, you can get it against this Commanders defense. That's the way it's been. And I actually do think that the game against the Eagles last week on Saturday was a perfect example of this. You pretty much were happy with anybody that you started in that game. Obviously Jalen Hurts throws several touchdowns. He throws one to Dallas Goedert. He throws one to Devontae Smith. A.J. Brown had a pretty big game in terms of the usage in the first half. He was getting a bunch of targets. The run game, obviously, Saquon Barkley had a big night. And I feel like that we could get that exact same sort of outing here with the Dallas Cowboys. Since this is over the course of the entire season, they allow the most points per dropback in single high, which would typically point you towards a George Pickens game, right? That's when we've seen Pickens be able to go off. And even last week when he goes against a Chargers defense that is more zone coverage heavy, he's still sees a lot of isolated opportunities in that game. I don't know what the kind of coaching point was there, if it was just, hey, the few ISO opportunities that he got in man coverage, Dak, who's a smart pre-snap quarterback, just going to him every single time. So he was able to make those plays there. You'd think that's going to be a George Pickens game. However, Commanders also give those points per drop back in zone coverage as well, which would typically point you to, like, that's a CeeDee Lamb type of game. So my question to you, Ray, when you hear both of those notes, and it's CeeDee Lamb, it's George Pickens, they're both projected for around 80 yards receiving if you're looking at their prop bet lines. Which one do you actually think is in position to have the bigger game here? Is it George Pickens or is it CeeDee Lamb? I mean, the answer is both, but if you had to pick one or the other, which one do you think?
I would say CeeDee Lamb. I would say CeeDee Lamb, maybe a little bit more than Pickens. He is the priority. Like, their goal, they get George Pickens involved, and it is beneficial for them to do it early. But in my opinion, just watching how they play in the game flow, like, there's no doubt CeeDee Lamb is the preferred number one option in the offense. Really gets, and then he does it in a multitude of ways, because he can play outside and inside. And then everything we're talking about with Flournoy. I still think if I had to pick one over the other, the answer is both. The answer are both are in great spots. It would be CeeDee Lamb. And you referenced how well the Eagles did last week with Goddard, with A.J. Brown, with Devontae Smith. Like, think about it. This same Washington team is what got J.J. McCarthy sort of getting back on track. He had three touchdown passes versus him. I mean, and that's why they're so bad. It's just easy to scheme players open versus this Commanders team. They're in shambles. Dan Quinn they have no clue what to do. They can't get after the quarterback. They don't have secondary to stop anybody. This is just for the Commanders to be as bad as they are and the Cowboys to be in the position they are. And Vegas still says, hey, we think they're going to score about 50 damn points in this matchup. It just lets you know that you're playing all your Cowboys. Like, you're playing them. You're hoping they get through. And I do think we will get one or maybe both of these guys with monster games between Lamb and Pickens.
I think that we'll see Lamb catch a lot of passes and we'll see big plays from George Pickens. Just typically that's how it would go, right? So if you're looking for props, yep, it's like longest reception for George Pickens, I think, is live. Whereas if you're just looking for overall catches, I think CeeDee Lamb is live there as well. So just looking at some of those numbers on BetMGM, CeeDee Lamb over under is 5.5 catches. The over is -145. So you may want to try to have to juice that bad boy up or put it in a parlay or something like that. If you're looking at the longest reception, that is where I think George Pickens could really come into play there. It just, to me, like, we're going to get opportunities for George Pickens to line up in single high coverage, and he's going to have one of those big plays. I just totally see that happening. Yeah. Longest reception for George Pickens is George Pickens is 26.5 yards. I would take the over on George Pickens to have one, at least one of those type of big plays. Just last note on this Cowboys passing game, unless you've got anything else, you mentioned Jake Ferguson's lack of yards after the catch for him. 24 tight ends this year have 50 or more targets. Five of them have fewer than 4 yards after catch per reception. Two of them are rookies, Mason Taylor, Gunnar Helm, not exactly big time athletes. Two of them are super old, Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz, and then the other is Jake Ferguson.
Oh boy, so, Jake Ferguson.
3.8 yards after catch per reception. Not getting a lot there. It was so funny when George Pickens was having that big moment, obviously at the beginning of the season, when CeeDee Lamb was hurt. What's gonna happen to George Pickens when CeeDee Lamb gets back? Nothing. Jake Ferguson's just gonna get completely shelved. And I say that as somebody that had Jake Ferguson on a fantasy team at that point and knew that was coming. And still, it's been pretty tough if you have him on a roster.
Yeah, 100%, man.
All right, let's talk about the Commanders here, because you mentioned this game still has a big total. And if you look at the implied point total, right, like Dallas is up there at 28, 29 points in this one. The Commanders are still projected for over 20 points here, according to BetMGM. So who's scoring? Like, who's going to be doing it? Because if we're looking at who's starting at quarterback, Marcus Mariota did not practice for a second straight day today. It's trending towards, according to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, veteran Josh Johnson making his first start of the season as of now. The team also added Jeff Driscoll. There's been some Sam Hartman questions about is he going to get a start down the stretch? What a mess. I mean, so, okay, who's going to be scoring these 21 points, Ray?
I'm trying to figure this out too, and maybe I'm misremembering, but I'm watching the game, and Josh Johnson, he goes in and he throws a pass, and I believe they said it was like the first time he threw a pass in an NFL game in years. I'm talking he's damn near like Phillip Rivers, but he's been in the NFL the entire time. I'm almost positive that was a stat that I heard, and I was like, wow. And then the pass he threw, I believe it was almost intercepted, and that's maybe why he didn't throw the ball. I don't know who's scoring. I don't know who's scoring all the points, because the one thing that this Dallas defense is quite good at, it's stopping the run. It's even versus the Chargers. Hampton had a big game, but overall, this is a very solid rushing unit. Since week 12, they are top 10. So over the last month plus, about 104 yards per game. Quinn Williams was out last week. You see right here, neck. He's been limited in practice this week. After some be feeling good, Quinn Williams, Pro Bowl selected there. Like, this defense is a matchup in which Marcus Mariota, absolutely Jaden Daniels, hell, maybe even me or you, Matt Harmon, should be able to score some points against this Dallas defense. But honestly, the real question is who is playing quarterback? If it's Josh Johnson, I just, as bad as it is, that would be a fireable offense to get lit up by Josh Johnson or Sam Hartman or whoever else you said, Jeff Driscoll potentially getting reps. This is one where I have a hard time seeing where the offense from Washington is going to come from.
Yeah, Josh Johnson threw 9 passes last week for the Commanders. He threw 5 passes combined from 2022 with the San Francisco 49ers and 2024 with the Baltimore Ravens. So, I mean, he at least threw 3 passes last year in a regular season game. Okay. So there is that. But, I mean, yeah, you're right. This would be a fireable offense, and yet I could see it happening with this Cowboys defense. Matt Eberflus right now is essentially doing the slow fade. You know, because there was the whole thing. Well, he's going to go from the sideline to the booth. I mean, next week he's going to be in the van calling plays, like out in the parking lot. And then by week 18, he's just going to take that van and drive off into the distance here, because he's obviously not going to be back next season. You know, it's like when you break up with somebody and you're like, I don't want to break up. I'm just going to kind of do a slow fade out of the relationship, slowly fade out of their life. That's what the Cowboys and Matt Eberflus are doing. They're slowly fading him out of the building here. So I actually have some faith that, like, Terry McLaurin can hit a couple of big plays against this secondary. I mean, whenever they line up in man coverage, which is not often, they just get completely fried. Rookie Siobhan Revelle maybe is a good player in the long run. He has given up a ton of big plays since he has gotten into the mix here. And he's their perimeter corner. You would expect him and Terry McLaurin to be doing some battle here. So Terry McLaurin, he's a guy who's never going to get a ton of volume consistently on a week-to-week basis. But you'd imagine he's going to be in line for some big plays in this one.
I still don't know who's getting him the ball, but you are absolutely right. He should. And if you look at the Chargers game last week, it was the first time all season long, Justin Herbert did not get sacked. The offensive line didn't get better. They didn't improve magically. Dallas has the second, I think they're tied for the 31st in the NFL in pressure to sack rate. They can't get after the quarterback. That is a big problem. So when you are giving whomever time, ultimately a receiver is going to win. And their secondary is poor. Revel's not good. Diggs came back. He gave up the first touchdown to Ladd McConkey. I don't know what he was looking at. Deron Bland is on IR. The safeties are old and slow. You can't get after the quarterback. The linebackers are hurt. The matchup is great. Matt, there should be multiple options from this Commanders team, Deebo Samuel included, who should score you some points in this one. I would feel better if it were Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm not saying I don't play him with Josh Johnson. I would feel better if it was Mariota. But the matchup, again, just like we talked about last week, it's like the perfect storm for any team to get right against, because they can't really do anything besides stop the run.
Yeah, man, I agree with you about the Marcus Mariota thing. In that lineup, actually, that I had Justin Herbert that did lose to Ashton Jeanty because I didn't want to play Herbert. We'll talk about this game later against the Houston Texans. I actually picked Marcus Mariota up as like a preemptive. I'm going to start him in week 17 against the Dallas Cowboys defense. Obviously, didn't have to worry about it anyways, but definitely thinking ahead, it looked like that matchup was going to be so prime for Mariota, who I think has played well. But now, obviously, it doesn't really matter. Since week 14, routes for the Commanders goes 69 for Terry McLaurin. Deebo Samuel is second. He has 10 catches for 105 yards in this span on 68 routes. Then it's Treylon Burks at 39, Noah Brown at 29, Ben Sinnott at 28. They're completely rotating the tight end position after Zach Ertz's injury. So, yeah, it pretty much, if you're just looking at the passing game, the only guys that are really getting the football right now is Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel. So as long as it's concentrated, if for whatever reason you want to be optimistic about either player, that's the thing you have to hope for. And it's obviously, in terms of air yards, completely different. Terry McLaurin, 12 air yards per target. Deebo Samuel, 4.1. So you got to hope that when they're in a lot of zone coverage looks, they're going to be peppering Deebo Samuel underneath, and then a couple of shot plays to Terry McLaurin and, you know, God help Josh Johnson out there on his 14th NFL team or whatever it is. He's 39 years old. I mean, he's actually an NFL player older than me, other than Phillip Rivers. There are some out there. So there you go. That's the Commanders. I'm not optimistic about the run game at all. I think it will have to be the pass game. And I think because this defense is in such rough shape, I actually do have some faith that either Debo or Terry is going to show up in this matchup. So pretty insane stuff. It's going to be a hell of a way to start your Christmas. If you are mad at your relatives for any reason, you don't like the gift that you got, just park them in front of the TV and have them watch the Commanders. I mean, because what an eyesore that team is right now. So hopefully we get a beautifully bad shootout, but that's all I can say about that game. We are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we've got two other games with some questionable quarterbacks starting in them. That's the theme of Christmas this year. Questionable quarterbacks starting. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to preview the Christmas Day slate of games here. Before we get into that, I got to give my guy Ray Garvin a shout out here. If you're watching us live, we take, you know, the 2-minute breaks as we do here because got to pay the bills, folks. Okay, we took the 2-minute break. Ray Garvin during the break got up and literally put a 13-pound brisket on the smoker. So number one, I want to give you a shout out. Number two, I want to say I'm jealous. I wish I was trying the finished product of that brisket. I think I could probably get to Texas though by the time it comes off if we're thinking about how long it's going to take.
it's going to take a minute, Matt. It's going to take a minute, but listen, I got you, baby. I got you. I know you'll be down here at some point in time. I promise you, you're going to come to the crib and I got you, baby.
Listen, I actually feel I would prefer to talk about smoked meats than these next two football games that we are going to preview here, at least some of them. But we are contractually obligated to talk about these football games, starting with Lions at Vikings, 44.5 point total here. The Lions are 6-point road favorites. A lot of road favorites on Christmas, by the way. I just want to say Cowboys are road favorites. Lions are road favorites. Obviously, we'll talk about the Broncos in a minute. They're a road favorite. One of those teams is losing, okay? There's just it chaos, Christmas, the whole deal. We're going to get one big upset. Maybe at the end of this segment, we'll decide which one of these teams is going to get upset. We'll put a pin in that. We'll come back to it. But the Lions here are going against the Vikings, which I actually would be – I guess I would be more excited about this game if J.J. McCarthy was starting, just because it's like more intriguing about what is he at this point. But he's obviously not going to play. We'll talk about the Vikings in a moment. On the Lions side of it here, Ray, the Lions are obviously on the ropes in terms of are they going to make the playoffs. They're a big long shot now to get into the postseason dance. The Athletics playoff predictor model does not give them very good odds to get into the postseason. They have a 4% chance right now, but obviously they need to win out and start. Starting with this game, what are we looking at when they have the football here?
Well, let's start with the quarterback. And I don't know if you noticed it like I noticed it. And if you just look at the final box score for Jared Goff, I mean, he had, what, 350 passing yards? Like, the numbers look good. But when there's pressure, it is rough for Jared Goff. You can see, I've heard at home, he's great inside a dome. I mean, Pittsburgh without T.J. Watt made him so uncomfortable. It threw that entire passing attack off for, I'd say, the better part of about 3.5 quarters of that game. And Jared Goff has to play better at home versus Pittsburgh. Yeah. And here, you know, where are they at? Minnesota? Like, he has got to play better. So it starts with Jared Goff. And I know there were some concerns I saw earlier in the day. Amon-Ra maybe not 100%. Right now, Matt, I don't know what the situation is with Sam Laporta, if he's eligible to return or if he's essentially out for the season. But, I mean, Jared Goff has got to play better. And I'll just be honest with you, this matchup versus Minnesota, and we could talk about their offense later, but defensively, this is not a great matchup for what Detroit wants to do. They are excellent at creating pressure. Excellent since week 12. Their pressure to sack rate, second best in the NFL, about 11.4%. Their passing defense, that is Minnesota, what Jared Goff has to go up against, number one in the NFL over the last month plus, only allowing about 126 yards per game. 126 per game. Their run defense is not great, right? It's not a great run defense, but overall, they have been number one in the NFL total defense since week 12, 255 yards allowed per game. I'm not telling you to bench anybody. I'm just giving you what this offense is up against and how that defense has played over the last month plus of the season.
It's such a good point about this defense here in Minnesota. They've really started. I mean, they've always been good, obviously, but it's obviously a tough outing to go against here for any of these players. I will say, though, from Goff's perspective, you're so right to point out that the final stat line was really great for him, but it was one of those Goff games that started off pretty rocky because of the pressure. Here's the thing with Jared Goff. He's actually had a lot of success against this Vikings defense. Amon-Ra St. Brown has actually had a lot of success against this Vikings defense, especially because, number one, they both play indoors, and Goff is better indoors versus outside, the whole deal. But Goff is a funny player, especially this year, in how his pressure stats versus his blitz stats work. So when he is pressured, he has a 68.6 passer rating. When he's kept clean, he has 127.7 passer rated according to Pro Football Focus. So obviously huge split there. He's one of the most effective quarterbacks when kept clean. He's not good when he's under pressure. We know the whole deal. However, when he's blitzed, he has 113.7 passer rating compared to when he's not blitzed. He's at a 107.1 passer rating. His passer rating actually goes up when he is blitzed versus when he's not. So I think the thing that you think about there is that, well, Goff is a great pre-snap quarterback. He's really smart. He knows what he's looking at, and he knows if you're going to send extra pressure, he knows where the gap is going to be. We know where he's going to, we'll talk about this in a moment. We know who he's going to get the football to, but this is important, Ray, because the Vikings defense has blitzed on 48.8% of their dropbacks according to Next Gen Stats. It's the only, not only is it number one in the NFL, they're the only team over 40%. So while obviously you can watch last week's game and be like, man, it's not great for Jared Goff. You know, there's going to be a lot of pressure. I do think specifically how he handles certain types of pressure looks, specifically what Minnesota is going to throw out, I actually think he might have a little bit of an advantage there.
Yeah, if they're going to do that, then absolutely. And you'd have to, you would think that we aren't the only people who have this information, right? You would think that Flores would be like, maybe we can generate pressure with a front four, confuse Goff, and generate the pressure without blitzing to give him that pre-snap identification on where he might go first or second. I think coaches are more stubborn than that. I don't think he's going to change what he's done all season. I do think they're going to blitz. So yeah, this is why I said Jared Goff needs to show up. And I also say Dan Campbell needs to show up. I think that there has not been enough discussed. This team, since he started to call play, they can't run the ball. And you could tell me it's the offensive line. It's not creative. It's very interesting to see how these two, this offense and this Lions defense, have completely shifted with losing Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. Now, Aaron Glenn's head coaching stuff is going in a different direction, but it's just not the same Lions team. The run creativity, it's just slam Gibbs up the middle, try to run a counter with him. Maybe we'll toss it to him. It just does not look the same. And I think it's putting Goff in some bad situations when you cannot run the ball, and I just don't want to hear it. With Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, it shouldn't look this bad. So while it starts with Goff and he has to play better, Dan Campbell's got to call a better game since he's the one calling the plays, right?
I mean, yeah, I think it's just I feel as if the narrative coming out of that Commanders game, which is the first time that Dan Campbell took over play calling, was okay. Now, and look, I was really impressed with what Dan did in that game. And I do think he has been an upgrade over John Morton. Of course, like when you take the play calling from John Morton after the last time this team played the Minnesota Vikings, which they won that game, you know, but there was some issues in that contest that I think were the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And Dan said, I got to take over here. I have a better feel for our players. And you're going to then call plays against the Commanders defense versus the Vikings defense. Yeah, it's going to look a lot better when you're going against that Commanders defense versus Minnesota. I think since then, it's probably dawned on Campbell that it's not just like, hey, call the good plays. You know, I got the good plays over here. Morton wasn't touching the good plays. And I also think, too, this is just what happens with good teams, right? It's the brain drain. You know, you look at what Ben Johnson is doing with the run game in Chicago, and I do think at this point the offensive line talent in Chicago and Detroit is probably even. Like, that is a piece of context worth putting out here. But if Ben Johnson's in the building, could he have maybe found a solve, gotten in the lab like during the bye week and figured out something that could have gotten a little bit better in terms of the results in the run game? I don't know. I mean, Dan Campbell had the famous quote after the Niners loss in the NFC Championship game. This might have been our best shot. We might never get back here. Said those type of things. These are the reasons why. Like, it just becomes harder and harder. And now you have your head coach double dipping as the play caller. It's definitely difficult. You're so right to point this out, that at this point now, there's a bigger burden on Dan Campbell to fix this run game with the season. Like, the sand is going out of the hourglass here. We're running out of time, and I don't really know what the solve is here, because I do think there is a big personnel issue up front.
It's tough, right, Matt? I don't know if there's really anything they can do at this point. You're just hoping that your guys, number zero and number five, David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, that they're just better than the defense on one individual play as they attempt to run the ball. And I'll say, I think both of them are. Both of them are good enough to where if there is a crease, if they do get it blocked up right, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got one of the most dynamic running backs in the league in Jahmyr Gibbs, and David Montgomery is a very capable running back. So I'm trying to, hear me out, Matt. Hear me out, Matt. Hear me out, people. I'm trying to learn, even this late in the damn season. I'm trying to learn, right? Trying to learn from the Ginty mistake that these guys are talented. It has not been good. It can't both be true, Matt. You can acknowledge that this run game has been terrible. It's not creative. They need to do better. But Gibbs and Montgomery, they have the ability to, if it is blocked up, they can flip the game on one reception, like Ginty, 60 yards and a touchdown, that can easily be Jahmyr Gibbs. One run, that can easily be David Montgomery or Jahmyr Gibbs. So I'm not advocating to bench him, sit him, or anything. I mean, I guess you could have a more deeper conversation about Monty and depending on your league size, but it's just acknowledging that this is a tough environment in which they need to play better because they have not produced, right? And if Monty is out, we're on the screen right now. If you're not watching, right here, David Montgomery illness listed as DNP in practice on Tuesday. It's a long way until game day. But if he's not there, even more so, like, just volume, 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 Gibbs will get there because he does it through the receiving game too.
Yeah, Minnesota is eighth in yards allowed, rushing yards allowed since week 12. They're eighth in yards after contact per allowed. They do not give up a lot of yards before contact. So they can control that line of scrimmage. Their interior guys like Jonathan Allen, these players have been a little bit disappointing this year. So I do think, like, yeah, it's only one crease that Jahmyr Gibbs needs in the run game. And then in the passing game, you mentioned it, the huge advantage there. That's the thing where the Ashton Ginty example is so perfect. He could make this in one play in the passing game, specifically to come back to those blitz stats here. Like, when Jared Goff is blitzed this season, we know where he is trying to get the ball to. Targets per route run when Jared Goff is blitzed. Amon-Ra St. Brown targeted on 35% of his routes, averages 2.9 yards per route. He leads the team. Jahmyr Gibbs is second, 34%. Targets per route, 3.53 yards per route, which is crazy for a running back, by the way.
Crazy.
Sam Laporta, 21.8%. David Montgomery, 21%. Jameson Williams is at the bottom at 16%. That actually, I'm curious if that has changed more in the back half of the year when he's obviously been more involved. I can look at that in a moment. But I do think generally over the last 2 years, it's followed a pretty similar trend, which is Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to get the ball more than anybody else. When Goff is blitzed this year, he has 40 targets. Nobody else has more than 20. But when Gibbs is on the field, he is also a good outlet in the passing game as well. So I definitely think from a prop bet perspective, St. Brown catches 6.5. I will take the over on that one. And Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, could be involved as a reception guy as well. So maybe the answer here is actually probably just the over-under on Jahmyr Gibbs is over under is 4.5. The over is minus 150. So there's you're giving up a lot there. Jared Goff over completions 21.5 might actually be a pretty good one too.
I kind of like that Goff completions one, especially all the defensive data. I like that. I like the Goff completions, and I do like both of those reception totals for both of those players.
Let's talk about when the Vikings have the ball here. We're going to get a Max Brosmer start. Obviously, Max Brosmer gave us one of, if not the least efficient start from anybody in the NFL when he went to Seattle to play the Seattle Seahawks. However, very different situation here playing this Lions defense indoors. And especially if you, I think like Brosmer was fine when he got into the mix, at the end, at the second half of the Giants game. What did he complete, like 7 of 9 passes here?
Yeah, he was fine.
O'Connell says he's fine. O'Connell said that McCarthy's not going to need surgery for the hairline fracture in his hand, which is very small, but he's not expected to go obviously on the short week here. So we're getting a Brosmer start, but in against this Lions defense, Ray, it actually might set up pretty well for the Vikings.
What an interesting start for both of these games. Jordan Mason, ankle, DNP in practice again on Tuesday. So it looks like it's Aaron Jones. And I don't know who the backup running back would be, Matt. I don't know if you can look that up to see if there's any
Xavier Scott potential still, hidden. I believe.
Okay, Xavier Scott. Well, listen, this Lions defense is dreadful. We've talked about a lot of bad defenses so far in this show. The Cowboys, we talked about the Commanders. This Lions defense, my goodness. Let me just walk you through some of this. One of the worst rushing defenses in the league. They're giving up about 145 on the ground per game. All right. Since week 12, their total defense, that is Detroit. Since week 12, I like looking at how these teams are playing down the stretch, right? Give me a month or so games. Since week 12, dead last. Dead last. The only team in the NFL allowing 400 plus yards per game since week 12, but it ain't just like 401, 402.1, 450 damn yards a game allowed by this Lions defense, Matt. I went and looked. I just wanted to see how bad this was over this since week 12 stretch. I went back to the year 2020, 2-0, 2-0. And I looked at each individual season from 2020, just from this week 12 to weeks, like, how bad is this? No defense since 2020 from this type of sample size is giving up more yards than the Detroit Lions. Not one single defensive season performance as bad as what we're getting now from Detroit. And you want to know who they leapfrog to take the number one spot? You want to know who they leapfrog to take that? Their own damn team. The 2020 Detroit Lions are number two in yards allowed during this time span. So when you're looking at this game, they're allowing over 300 passing yards per game. They don't get after the quarterback, even though Aiden Hutchinson is a Pro Bowl. He's the only damn person that can rush the quarterback. Like, this sets up to be a game in which you should feel real good starting Justin Jefferson, starting Aaron Jones, starting Jordan Addison, who can't catch the ball of late. But again, just like I asked you an hour ago, the quarterback, right? How much do you trust Mad Max Brosmer in this one when the defense is literally, since week 12, it's the worst individual defensive season since 2020, what these Lions team are giving up right now?
Obviously, there's still issues on the offensive line. Christian Darrisaw's on IR too, for the Minnesota Vikings, but I kind of feel okay about this Lions offense going against this Vikings offense going against this Lions defense, man. Like, is this the Justin Jefferson game? Is it? I mean, with all the stats that you laid out there, Justin Jefferson to get over 100 yards in this game is plus 320. When are you ever in your life going to get plus 320 on Never. Justin Jefferson over 100? Never again. Maybe next week if he doesn't get it here.
Maybe
next week. But still, I mean, in a spot like this, island game on Christmas, they play the Packers next week. We'll see. Like, this could be the moment here for this offense. I kind of think that there's just a lot of high scoring potential in this one. I realize Brosmer is what he is. Obviously, he was just not equipped to handle Seattle undrafted rookie making a start on the road like that against the best defense in the league. But this is a completely opposite spot of that. I'm not saying Brosmer's going to come in here and light it up, but this offense has sort of found a rhythm lately. They've run the ball a little bit better than they did at the start of the season. They've been able to hit more explosive. They've gotten the tight ends more involved. McCarthy has felt settled. So could Brosmer come in here and get the start at home against a favorable defense? I'm not saying it's the craziest thing in the world if they're just functional in this game.
Matt, I said it last week that I felt good about Jefferson versus the Giants, and I'm with you. And to be quite honest with you, I like the fact that we've seen Brosmer a little bit. At least this will not be his first NFL action, right? He got thrown to the Wolves versus Seattle. He got put into the game last week, and he got Jefferson the ball. There was a little connection there. Like, he knew where to throw the ball to. I think we had a graphic up on the screen that TJ Hockenson is out. We know Addison hasn't really caught the ball. Jordan Mason not practicing, or Hockenson wasn't practicing. It might just be get the ball to number 1-8. Get the ball to 18. This Lions defense over the last five games has been dreadful. So if there were going to be a matchup for Brosmer to come in and just get the ball to Jefferson, I like him this week, Matt. In week 17 for your fantasy championship, I think he can find success. This defense is very, very bad. Outside of Aiden Hutchinson, they should be able to run the ball and get it to Jefferson.
And I want to give defensive coordinator Kelvin Shepard some credit here. You know, obviously, he's taken over for Aaron Glenn. I do think at the beginning of the year when they were healthier, he was putting some good stuff out there. I thought that at times this defense looked pretty awesome. The problem is they've just had so many injuries. It's the same thing along the offensive line where they were already kind of behind the eight ball in terms of coaching change, some personnel changes, and then they had injuries. It's really the same thing on defense here for Detroit. So I do want to give – I think Kelvin Shepard is one of these guys that I think should be on the radar in terms of good developing young coaches. He was a player not that long ago. He's well-regarded. I just want to give him some credit here. And that's before I say – that pretty much even once they've had these injuries, they've just not really changed anything up. You know, they're still doing what they do. They still run a lot of man coverage and a lot of single high. Since week 12, they played man coverage on 43% of their dropbacks. That is the second most in the NFL in that span, according to fantasy points data, only second to the Cleveland Browns. Well, they give up one of the highest points per dropback rates. They still play a ton of single high. They give up the third most points per dropback in single high when they're in that coverage, only behind the Miami Dolphins and, of course, the Washington Commanders. You can't do anything right. And I say that to say that Justin Jefferson is going to be in some of those looks. It might be only a couple times per game because obviously you want two eyes on Jefferson all the time, but there's going to be moments when he's isolated up. And I can just see the big plays coming here. So I agree with you, Ray. I think for your fantasy football championships, if you somehow made it with Justin Jefferson, I think there's a pretty good chance he's going to have a moment here.
Well, you see the tweet on the screen. The Lions defense allowing 458.6 over their last five games. For context, the Bengals have allowed the most yards per game this season at 402. I think the loss of Brian Branch a few weeks ago was significant.
Yeah,
whoever was playing safety for him last game, I mean, the angles that safety was taking, number 12, not good. You do what you got to do, right? Do what you got. As Matt says, don't let us set the lineups for your fantasy teams. But I mean, 460 yards per game. This is an historically bad stretch by a defense that, sure, injuries, all that stuff, this is what it is, right? They're giving up almost 500 yards of offense per game. Kevin O'Connell, draw it up. Let's go, man. Let's go. Draw it up and get the ball to 18.
All right, let's get to the last game here on Christmas. It's the Amazon Prime game, and man, they must just be so happy that they've got Broncos Chiefs, and the Broncos are leading the AFC West, and yet the Chiefs are in complete shambles here. The Broncos are 13-point road favorites. They are minus 13 heading into this game with a 36.5-point total. That means that the implied total for the Kansas City Chiefs is it's 12 points. It's the lowest on the slate. The Chiefs are projected to score the fewest points this weekend. And I mean, yeah, I believe it. Who is playing for this Chiefs team? I have no idea. To peel the curtain back, we We don't even have like stats for this, because what are we supposed to say about this Chiefs team at this point? I will just note, like, what do you think about when the Broncos have the ball? Like, that Chiefs defense did not put up much of a fight against Cam Ward. They gave up Cam Ward's best game of his career. They're obviously dealing with some personnel losses, but they still have their guys on the defensive line, theoretically. What do we think Denver's going to do when they get the ball?
Run the ball, pass the ball, just get on track. Honestly, I think it's a game in which they didn't play great. Versus Jacksonville. And much like we talked about the final stat line for Goff, you look at Nix's final stat line, I think he had 300 plus passing yards, touchdown in the game, but he was just thoroughly outplayed by Trevor Lawrence at home. I think this is a game where Denver should go out. I think they should throw the ball. I think Courtland Sutton, Troy Franklin are going to be in play. Matt Harmon, they're going to run the ball with RJ Harvey. They've got to keep their foot on the gas, because there are a couple of different scenarios where Denver is not the number one overall seed,
yeah,
and they're playing. There's no bye. So I think they're taking this game very seriously. Even though Vegas is, you know, 13-point favorites, 36.5-point total, I think you see the full complement of the offense from Denver. What I saw last week that I liked was Courtland Sutton and his usage. That was encouraging to see. RJ Harvey getting it going on the ground. I just think this is one where they just need to get going. Probably not going to have the rookie 13, Pat Bryant. I don't know what his injury designation is, but carted off of the field. Would not assume that he's playing. So this actually might be a little better for us in fantasy, because it consolidates it down. Now it's Sutton, it's Franklin, it's Harvey. You got a little spattering of Evan Engram in there. But I think we see Denver's full offense out here versus Kansas City. They got to get right. This is a get right spot for them, and they should do just that.
I completely agree. It's a get right spot. I think that they can generally have whatever they want in this game. You know, obviously RJ Harvey's just cemented himself as a fantasy starter. Like he has, based on the way I think he's played as a running back. I think the usage for him, the goal line work, we're looking at the projections right now. He's projected to touch the ball 17 times. That's, yeah, you're playing that guy in fantasy football, even as a 13-point favorite here. I mean, you're definitely playing the starting running back for that team in fantasy for sure, almost regardless of the matchup data. I will note about Kansas City's secondary. Since week 12, they have played the third most man coverage on a percentage basis. They've actually been more... They've given up more production in zone coverage relatively than man coverage, but they have played a lot of man coverage. And when you get man coverage, if you're the Denver Broncos, the yards per route run, it's so stark in terms of how much it favors Courtland Sutton. Courtland Sutton against man coverage averages 2.98 yards per route run. These are the other yards per route run figures for some of the other mainstay pass catchers in Denver against man coverage. Troy Franklin, 0.78. Evan Engram, 0.87. Pat Bryant, 0.74. There's one man coverage beater on this team in terms of the production, and that is Courtland Sutton. Troy Franklin's been targeted 22 times against man coverage. He's caught 11 passes for 61 yards. He has scored 3 touchdowns, though, so there is that. He's definitely gotten some looks down close to the red zone against man coverage. But for the most part, it's been the Courtland Sutton show. So if Sutton is on your fantasy team, I think he's a high-end wide receiver to bare minimum this week. Definitely matchup favors him. Volume favors him as well.
Yeah, love that. So I'm looking at his usage, too, over the course of the season. One of the highest utilized wide receivers versus man coverage. So this is good. I like Sutton. And Sutton can play. Sutton's a good receiver for what he's asked to do. Is he the most dynamic Matt? You know, are you starting your franchise off building around Courtland Sutton? No, but I think he's a good option to have for a quarterback like Bo Nix, and I think you can count on him here in championship week.
Yeah, it's Courtland Sutton's just one of those funny players where, you know, he's not the best receiver in the NFL, this, that, and the other. Nope. Like he had a point this season where, oh man, is Troy Franklin, you know, the number one in Denver, that whole deal. You look up and at the end of the year, right now, he's 11th among wide receivers in receiving yards. Like, he's been one of the more productive guys. It's been a bit up and down, guess what? Every receiver is up and down. Jameson Williams is 10th in the NFL in receiving yards. And in the first 9 weeks of the season, he was averaging 2.6 catches per game. Like, that's just the way this position goes. Sutton's definitely one of those up and down players, but he generally, at the end of the year, you know what you're going to get from a guy like Courtland Sutton. So I like him in this game. And I do think Troy Franklin, too, is a fine wide receiver three play here because no Pat Bryant. When Pat Bryant's not in there, it's going to be Troy Franklin as that secondary target there. Little Jordan Humphrey obviously is involved as well. So that's what we think about the Broncos. Ray, Kansas City Chiefs.
No.
I mean, I don't really know even what to say. Like, Chris Oludokun, I have no idea. Rashee Rice is still on the concussion protocol. We don't know if he's going to clear it by the time Christmas comes around here. So do you have, I mean, anything? Is it just straight no with Kansas? No? Yeah.
No.
I mean, this is where we are with the Kansas City Chiefs right now. There's just like nothing to say, nothing to talk about here.
No, I think the answer is no. Xavier Worthy, Travis Kelce, this quarterback. No, the answer is no. Not in week 17. If this was week 11 and you needed somebody to throw out there, Matt, I can make an argument. I'll stretch one for you. The upside. And somebody may score. Vegas projects them to get in the end zone, but in week 17, the answer is no. Find another option at tight end. I doubt Rashee Rice is going to play. You're not playing Kareem Hunt. Pacheco led the team in receptions last week. I know. The answer for me is no. I'm sorry. If I had to give you a desperation chief, it would be Isaiah Pacheco, I guess. But I would hope you could do a little better than that.
The funny thing is, too, I was about to say, you know, it'd be one thing if they weren't going against one of the best defenses in the NFL and in the Denver Broncos that plays a lot of man coverage, which this offense, even with Patrick Mahomes, struggled to throw against man coverage. If it would be one thing if they were going against a defense that gave up a lot of downfield production and a lot of, you know, big passing plays. That was last week. They went against the Titans and they got dog walked in that game. So, yeah, I just think there's nothing on this Chiefs offense. Maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe Chris Oludokun has a Christmas little special for us. I don't see it. I'm not projecting it. That is for sure. Certainly that no Chief should be in your fantasy football lineup. I said this before we tossed the break here, Ray. I said that I was going to ask you, if you had to pick one of these three teams, the home dogs here on Christmas, Chiefs, Vikings, Commanders, which one would you project? Not to cover. I'm saying if you we're not holding you to this take, but who is most likely to pull off the upset in your mind?
I'm going to have to just.
I think it's
my. Oh,
I think it's Minnesota.
I think it's the Viking. I think it's. Yeah. I think it's Minnesota. Yeah. I think it's Minnesota.
I think it's Minnesota.
I think it's Minnesota.
Which is funny too, because I think I feel so good about that. This Lions offense can pick some nits in the Vikings defense, but you know, you get one weird turnover on the which the Vikings can certainly do. They can create some chaos. Jared Goff's, you know, liable to give you one goofy turnover a month. He's maybe due for that. You get that turnover there, and then, man, Justin Jefferson takes over the game on offense. I could see it. So yeah, I think I'd rank it Minnesota, Washington. Gap.
Yeah.
Kansas City.
In terms of,
that's what we're talking about here.
Same.
The Cowboys can always make a game weird, but if it was Marcus Mariota, I think they'd be a much more interesting pick for this regard. But yeah, it's obviously Minnesota, I think, is to play here. All right, we are going to take another quick break. We come back. We got two Saturday games to preview. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to preview the holiday slate, we'll call it here. Let's talk through these two Saturday games, which, let's be honest, got some more intrigue here with these two games, starting with Texans at Chargers. The Chargers, we actually have a home favorite here. The Chargers are 2-point favorites, 39.5 point over under according to BetMGM. Let's talk about when the Texans have the ball here. Obviously a lot of focus on what can the Chargers do against Houston's defense, but when Houston has the ball, Ray, what are we looking at in this game?
Yeah, CJ Stroud. Let's start with the quarterback who, I mean, he's played really good ball since coming back from the concussion. I know that it was a much closer game than anybody anticipated versus the Raiders. But you know what? That happens in the NFL. And what you want to see are good teams find a way to overcome some of their deficiencies that day and pull off a victory, and they got it done. Stroud's getting the ball to Nico Collins. And I know last week could have been a bigger game for Nico Collins. Dalton Schultz is the one that scored the touchdown, but they got the win. And I think for both of these teams, like this is a very important game for both of these teams. Both of these teams, a win will go a long way for their playoff seeding and the playoff picture. When Houston has the ball, it's C.J. Stroud. I'm not sure what we're going to get from the running game. It looks like Woody Marks is back in practice. Last week, we talked about Jawar Jordan, and it was Nick Chubb who started off the game running the ball. Now, Jordan did look good in spurts when he came in, but you're adding another body to the backfield whom he'll probably get dinged up at some point because that's what Woody Marks does. Is there another option for Houston? What's going to have to happen in this game, in my opinion, the Texans are going to have to throw to somebody else as well. It cannot just be Nico Collins. If they just think that they're going to ISO and throw the ball from Stroud to Nico and that's going to get it done, they're going to have to find another option to get the ball to. And when you look at Dallas's game plan last week, that's what they did. CeeDee Lamb was involved, but Flournoy was involved early. George Pickens was involved to keep this San Diego defense at bay. This is truly strength on strength here. This is a very, very difficult matchup for the Chargers, and for the Texans. I think both offenses are going to face some resistance because these defenses are really, really good. The Chargers defense is good. Number 3 in total yards allowed per game. That is the San Diego Chargers. Rushing yards allowed per game, 10th best. 305 rushing yards allowed since week 12, the fewest in the NFL. And then passing, like you just can't throw on them. Both of these teams are under 180 passing yards per game over the last month. This is over the course of the season. I didn't even segment this thing out. Like they are not allowing any yards through the air. So the efficiency from Stroud, their commitment to the run game, by which I give Houston credit, it may not be at 5-10 yards a clip every week, but they're going to run the ball. It doesn't matter who's back there. They're going to establish it with D'Amico Ryan. So when Houston has the ball, like 39.5 points total in this one. This is with the Chargers favored by 2 points. This is projected to be a very low scoring game, Matt.
Yeah, and it makes sense too. Even as you said, you know, when C.J. Stroud has been back, he obviously, I agree with you. He has been good. But in terms of the overall volume of the passing attack, he has not cleared 280 yards in any game. The two games that he's been the most productive from a stats perspective, yardage-wise, it's been Indianapolis, it's been Arizona. Obviously, Arizona is a travesty of a defense. They've been the worst defense in the league in the second half of the year, at least one of them. And the Raiders game was definitely a little bit concerning, I would say. And the other concerning note here for the Texans in terms of, I do think they could potentially win this game, and I think the offense could have some success, but typically when Houston's passing offense has been firing off, it's been Nico Collins dominating against man coverage. This Texans team plays, this Chargers team plays a ton of zone coverage. They did, again, to my surprise, ISO up on Pickens more than I thought, played some more man looks, or maybe it's zone that turns into match, whatever you want to call it, but there were more isolated situations for him. I would tend to doubt that's going to happen against Nico Collins because he's so clearly the alpha in that room. C.J. Stroud, even since he's been back and he's been playing well, he ranks 18th among starters in adjusted yards per attempt against zone coverage.
Yeah, and the Chargers defense is good, right? Like this pass rush can get home. They've got – now, I believe their starting linebacker, Perryman, is suspended for a game or two for his hit on Flournoy last week. So that's a little bit of a downgrade, but one player, probably linebacker, not going to make or break this defense. That's why I keep saying they're going to have to find somebody else to get the ball to. Dalton Schultz is going to be involved, and he's been involved. He's been one of the better tight ends this second half of the season. Who is it that steps up to take some of the pressure away from Nico? Because here's what I don't think is going to happen. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball with a great deal of success versus the Chargers. So that means, like, Stroud's going to have to throw it. He's going to have to throw it. Mm-hmm. Who else is going to step up for Houston, Matt?
I mean, there's just nobody really stepping up right now. I mean, Jaden Higgins is an interesting name, obviously. He averages 1.3 yards per route on the season against zone coverage. Nico Collins has still been really productive against zone, 2.01 yards per route. It's just when they're typically having those monster games, it's in isolated man coverage looks. But obviously, I think Nico's one of the best receivers in football. He can have a good game,
yes,
you know, absolutely no matter what. Like, I'm not questioning whether Nico can bear the load of this passing game. I think that can absolutely happen. But when you're just looking at, like, even the last since CJ Stroud got back, yeah, Jaden Higgins has been nice. He's got 10 passes for 120 yards. He's run a route on 62% of the dropbacks. So maybe he is the option there. They move him around the formation a little bit. They get him routes off the line of scrimmage. I do like his work on big crossing routes against zone coverage. So maybe it could be him. But the reality is, Ray, it is just Nico Collins and it's Dalton Schultz. Like, I think it'll have to be Dalton Schultz sort of as the dump off receiver here to just kind of keep the chains moving, because nobody else is a full-time player on this offense.
Talk to me about the running game then, Matt. Talk to me about your confidence level in, let's just go back to the two-headed monster of Woody Marks. And if Nick Chubb's active, he's going to touch the ball. So do you have any confidence in these guys versus the Chargers defense?
Chargers since week 12 give up 305 rushing yards. That's the fewest in the NFL. 3.5 yards per carry. I don't see how Houston can run this ball and, like, be one of those offenses that, because, and that's another thing too, when teams have gotten the Chargers, when you're running at them, that isn't great. And Houston has tried to use, like, inside zone, and I think Marks has been solid in that regard, but they don't have those guys. Like, think about what Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt had a big game against this team. It's the perimeter, like, gashing runs to the outside. I don't think Woody Marks is that guy. Nick Chubb definitely ain't that guy.
No.
Jawar Jordan maybe has flashed some big playability, but I still think he's too unproven to set your watch by. I don't think the run game can have success in this matchup.
Yeah, and that's going to – maybe Nico just gets volume to death, right? We're sitting here talking through all the ways in which Houston may need to play. In every corner and every door we open, it's like, no, I don't think they can run. There's not really another receiver. So then it just points back to if this is a truly good football team, a team that is in position, they want to have a deep playoff run, then Nico's going to step up. Maybe that's the answer,
yeah,
Matt. You know, maybe the answer is just it's a big Nico Collins game. Nico, George Pickens had a great game versus the Chargers. Mm-hmm. CeeDee Lamb may have had had it just been him or Norflornoy, CeeDee Lamb was not invisible. So maybe the answer is just Nico Collins, and that's who you bank on to have just a monster day versus the Chargers.
I mean, last time these two teams played, it was in the playoff game last year against the wild card in the wild card round, and it was Nico Collins dominating and the defense took over the game. That's pretty much what they're going to have to hope happens here. Like, that's the formula for this Texans team. The defense takes over the game and dominates, and Nico Collins and CJ Stroud do just enough, because they couldn't run the ball last year and they didn't have a secondary threat, and they beat this Chargers team in the postseason. Now, this Chargers team is a little bit different, and we can transition over to them here, but because I do think, again, this Chargers team is a little bit different. You could argue it's probably worse along the offensive line. Last year in the playoff game, Ray, they had Joe Alt and they had Rashawn Slater. They ain't got those guys now. And I feel as if Herbert is going to experience some serious whiplash going from a guy that had one of the best quarterback games of the season against the Cowboys to now playing the other team in Texas and probably not finding the same level of success.
Yeah, probably not going to find the same level of success. You see on the screen right here, Kamani Vidal didn't practice on Tuesday. Listen, this defense is it's very bad. It's very good. It's a very bad matchup for the Chargers, mm-hmm. right? I talked about it with the Dallas Cowboys game. Last Sunday was the first time this season Justin Herbert did not get sacked, because Dallas can't generate pressure. That's not what they do. They are one of the worst teams at the NFL at generating pressure. Well, Houston, not so much. A little bit different over here. I do think those tackles, they want to throw Trevor Penning out there. You want to put Pipkins out there against Will Anderson? Good luck. Be my guest. Their pressure to sack rate, 7th in the NFL, 8.7%. Number 4 against the pass are this Houston Texans defense. Total yards given up. And here's the thing. Ashton Jeanty has a good game. So then people's initial thought is, well, that defense can't be that good. Like, it ain't. Don't let what he did in that isolated moment skew you from the fact that all the other running backs, all the other players didn't do this, didn't have that type of game versus this Houston defense. So I do think that their ability to impact Herbert, which we know there is, when he is under pressure, it's a completely different offense. It's a completely different Justin Herbert. This isn't Dallas. I'm glad he had the type of game that he had last week, and I was very confident in my proclamation that he would be a top fantasy scorer. This is one where I'm back to the same thing, Matt. Process over the results. And the process here is this matchup for this Texans defensive line. They should absolutely feast. And they didn't have Azeez Al-Shaair, their Pro Bowl linebacker. He wasn't even in the game versus Dallas. He was out with an injury. I don't know if he's back or not, but this is a completely different beast for the Chargers right here. That is the Texans defense.
Yeah, it's a huge whiplash moment for the passing game in particular. The Texans defense, it's interesting. They've gone into like more single high looks, which, you know, you would think like, okay, great. You're going to play a lot of single high. Maybe you're giving up a lot of production to the outside receivers. They don't. They've given up the 11th most yards to receivers lined up, 19th most yards to receivers lined up out wide, 84 yards per game since week 11. Like, wide receivers on the outside don't have big plays against this team. They actually give up the 11th most yards to slot wide receivers, 81 yards per game since week 11. So it's just a tough defense to figure out. Now, Herbert's one of the smartest quarterbacks in the NFL. I think Herbert is so good pre-snap. He's a quarterback's quarterback. I really am a fan of Herbert's game, and especially the intelligence that he plays with. So he can obviously, you know, kind of unwind and figure out some of these Texans coverages, but man, I it's just going to be tough behind that offensive line with these pass rushers. The more we talk about this game, Ray, the more I think this is going to be a low scoring one. You know, I think
it could be
pretty similar. And look, it's 39.5 point total. I could see it being under that. I could truly see by the time this game comes around, it's actually been bet down to a lower number. I think this could be a lower scoring game, and it pretty much is like, hey, does Ladd McConkey make a play for the Chargers? Does Nico Collins make a play for the Texans? And that's pretty much it. Because otherwise, I don't know that you can play too many of these guys against either one of these defenses here. Now, Amarian Hampton is somebody to talk about here. Hampton, I mean, looks the part. He looks good. He's going to get a bump in playing time with Kamani Vidal not out there. He's been used a little bit as a designed pass catcher. I think that could be important here for Houston. You see that sometimes for the great defenses. They'll give you production underneath, both in the run game, but also in your pass game to running backs. So I think Hampton is a guy that, you know, not going to say he's going to have a Genty type game, but certainly could be in play here as a running back too in fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the volume, right? Hampton has looked really good since returning from his injury. Vidal's going to have a role on this team, I think, for a while. But there's, in my opinion, it's no doubt that the priority should be get number 28, Omarion Hampton, the ball. Number 8, excuse me. I'm going back to his college number. Number 8, Omarion Hampton, the ball. I think he's fine against Houston. Like, this is still, Genty carried the ball 24 times in that game. And he popped the two big plays, one of them being in the passing game. But it was not an easy test for Ashton Genty, right? He didn't just go out there and light up this Houston Texans defense, gashing them run after run. It was a physical game, and he got the volume. Geno Smith, you look at what they did. It wasn't much, right? The leading receiver was Ashton Genty. Then it was Jack Besh. Then it was Trey Tucker and Brock Bowers. It wasn't like there's a lot of receivers out there anyway. I do think that Hampton's going to have to take pressure off of Herbert. My concern is that there is no Kamani Vidal, because Hampton and pass pro is still not good. They don't trust him out there in those situations. That's my only concern. Not to bench him, but this is a tough matchup. I'm with you. 39.5, as low as it is, Matt, it still seems a little higher. There will be interceptions thrown. I think Herbert and CJ Stroud may give the ball away. This is a great game. Like, don't get it twisted. We're talking negatively or bearishly about some of the players, but this is an awesome matchup right here.
Who do you think wins if you had to pick it?
If I had to pick it, I'm going to take the Chargers. As much as I want to lean on the defense, I do think that Houston's inability to probably run the ball, I just don't trust Chubb, Marks, or Jawar Jordan to really do enough. I'll lean on the run game of the Chargers, Justin Herbert at home. And I know, Matt, it wasn't a big day for those receivers, but it's been a while, right? Ladd and Keenan Allen and QJ, it was good to see them playing like how they played earlier this season, right? Does that carry over here versus Houston? Maybe not, but at least it's some momentum that maybe we can do some different things here. And they're probably forced into that with no Vidal and some of the other things that are happening in this offense. If I had to pick, I'd pick LA.
11th most yards per game, like I said, to slot receivers. I do think we get a couple of big Ladd McConkey plays here, and that's just enough for the Chargers to win. I just trust look, everybody is going to talk about, oh my God, Justin Herbert and this offensive line going against Houston. And I agree, it's going to be a tough day on offense for Justin Herbert and the boys over there. But I think it's also a pretty tough day for CJ Stroud and that offense going against the Chargers defense. And right now I just have a little bit more faith in what's going on with Justin Herbert and those guys on offense. And I think Stroud and this team can, in a one game sample in the playoffs, upset somebody. Shoot, they could upset the Chargers in the playoffs. That could conceivably happen if that matchup ends up happening. But I just think this is a bit of a tougher spot for them on the road in LA. So yeah, give me the Chargers by a little bit here too. Last game we are going to talk about: Baltimore Ravens at Green Bay Packers. Packers right now are 2.5-point home favorites, 40.5-point over-under. Another game that is a little bit difficult to talk about because, once again, we come back to the theme. We don't know who's playing in this one. You know, we're obviously recording this on Tuesday night. We don't know if Lamar Jackson's going to play. We don't know if Jordan Love is going to play. Malik Willis said today at practice that he expects to go in this game. So if let's live in a world where both quarterbacks let's live in a world where Lamar Jackson is playing for the Baltimore Ravens when we talk about them. What do we expect from the Ravens when they have the ball going into this Packers defense that, I don't know about you, Ray, but it felt like a unit that was still good but did not have Micah Parsons in that game against Chicago to finish it off?
It's absolutely a unit that is still good, but it's absolutely a unit that no longer has Micah Parsons. You asked me the question, what do we think about the Ravens when they have the ball? That was the question, right, Matt? I want to make sure I'm answering this the right way. I was more pissed off with the coaching decisions of the Ravens in that game than I have been any team in the NFL this season, and I'm not even a Ravens fan.
Wow.
I don't trust them. I'll be honest with you. I don't trust them. I think there was coaching malpractice that happened in Baltimore on Sunday Night Football. I think the Ravens deserve to lose that game. When you've got a running back that you've paid all that money to, averaging 7 yards an attempt, and he doesn't touch the ball from the 12-minute mark of the fourth quarter to the end of the game because you want to work Keaton Mitchell in, you want to do some different things. You know what the Ravens were forced to do at the end of the game? Trying to come back throwing the damn ball to Rasheen Ali because you refused to give Derrick Henry the ball. The only reason they were in that game at that point in time. I don't trust them. I do not. And a lot of people are going to look at this one game, but this has been a problem of Baltimore all year long. All year long. When Zay Flowers looks like he's going good, they stop throwing him the ball. The tight end position, you paid Mark Andrews this money. I think he might have 2 catches since he got a contract, Matt. 2 damn receptions since he got the contract extension. There's no Isaiah Likely. I know he's going to drop it in the end zone. At least he'll give me 40 yards before we get to the end zone. It makes no sense at all. Lamar ain't 100%. I don't think they're a good team. It took me 16 weeks to just come to that revelation. They're not a good football team. They're not a good offensive unit. There's no cohesiveness there. They don't have enough weapons in the passing game. I love Derrick Henry, and I love Lamar Jackson. I don't love this team right now, and I don't love this matchup. I don't. If Lamar's on the field, great. Much better. That gives him a chance to win. If it's Snoop Huntley, I don't care if it's Malik Willis, Bruce Willis, or Willis Reed. They will win. They will lose the game. I'm telling you right now. So, no, I don't have a lot of faith in Baltimore's offense. They need to run the ball with Derrick Henry. Get the ball to Zay Flowers, but I don't trust him, Matt.
I have to fact check you, Ray. Mark Andrews has 5 catches since they signed him to a contract extension in 3 games.
Excuse me.
So he has averaged 3 games, 5 catches. not even, you know, about two per game. So you're right. He had two. He has two per game. There you go.
There we go. There we go.
It's terrific. Yeah. Tough, obviously, in terms of what we're getting here from this whole offense. I agree with you, man. Something just feels off about Baltimore this year. And I kind of gave up the ghost on them a while ago in terms of them being a good team. And it just seems to be getting weirder and weirder. I mean, you've got Mark Andrews, you know, pitching the ball back like that he's got that highlight. If you're looking for Mark Andrews highlights since he signed the contract extension, you've got tush push stuff and you've got him pitching the ball back for whatever reason at the end of the second quarter. I mean, it just bizarre stuff from Mark Andrews there. I don't know what's going on. That feels bizarre. The Derrick Henry usage feels bizarre. They have like no answers on offense. They've had no answers on offense all year, especially in the passing game. They're, you know, rotating in DeAndre Hopkins a bunch. He has like one cool catch a game and that's it. Zay Flowers makes mental mistakes. It's just, I don't think they're a good team at all. I don't think they're a good offense. I do think their defense can still keep them in this game. Especially if it's Malik Willis on the other side. I think Malik played really well on Saturday night, and I do think Malik Willis is an interesting free agent. I actually think he's a pretty interesting fantasy starter potentially if he does get out there in this game. I think he's a potential streamer in Superflex formats. I know I have one team where I have Lamar Jackson in a fantasy football championship. If he doesn't go, I'm ready to spend the whole budget on Malik Willis as a free agent and pick him up and potentially start him. I think he's potentially good there because they do give up the fifth most yards per game to receivers lined up out wide, do the Baltimore Ravens since week 11. They allow a league low 3.5 yards per run. So I don't think that this is a game where, whether it's a banged up Josh Jacobs, you know, dragging his leg into the game, or it's Emmanuel Wilson starting, I don't think this is a game where the Packers can control it on the ground. I think they will have to throw to win here.
Yeah, that's the one thing the Ravens defense, they've played better of late, although that was an egregious pass interference missed call on Kayshon Booty down there from Marlon Humphrey. But yeah, like that, when you just think about that game, all the momentum was tilting in the favor of Baltimore, and their inability to close out games, to win close ones, like they should have won that game, Matt. Yeah. The game plan here, when the Ravens have the ball, even though this Packers defense is still tough, it should be Derrick Henry. It's time. It's December. It's playoff season. They've got to win out and get help. I think they're still mathematically in it. It should be Derrick Henry, and that's how the game started off. First series of the game, Henry scores a touchdown, and then you get to the fourth quarter when he ties it up for you, and they just avoid him. They're trying to find these explosives through Keaton Mitchell. And did you hear John Harbaugh after the game? He said it. He was like, yeah, Derek should be out there. He should have been out there when we're trying to win the game. We're trying to rotate backs. But he just said, yeah, Derek should have been out there. It should be King Henry's time here come week 17. But I just don't trust it, Matt.
I don't trust it either. And this is a game they have to win. If they lose this game, they lose the AFC North. And then it's Pittsburgh, baby. Pittsburgh could rest starters for 2 weeks before the playoffs. Get some of those old guys some rest before they go into the playoffs. That is a potential thing that could happen here. Okay, that is our game previews. We are going to take one more quick break. We come back on the other side. We're going to give some fantasy dilemmas that we're facing in our championships. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back and rapid fire here to end the show. Ray and I are going to discuss a couple of fantasy dilemmas, get the other feedback in terms of what we're doing in our championship matchups. Ray, what's something that you're struggling with this week, what to do, and let's try to help each other out here.
All right, I'm struggling with Jonathan Taylor in this one. Matt Harmon, I know he scored a touchdown here on Monday night. I don't know what the Colts are going to do. Phillip Rivers, does he play? Is it even worth it? They're eliminated from the playoffs, and he's got Jacksonville. His run defense is tough. We've talked about it. JT is awesome. You see the projections here. You're playing him probably, but it's a little scary for me going up against Jacksonville with how this team has played down the stretch. And JT's been bad. He's been bad since they've come off a bye. He's been bad.
It's so tough. And, you know, with the quarterback being in shotgun on 95% of his plays, it's just a very limited run menu. You know, that was different than it was, you know, going to be with Daniel Jones in there. Rivers is going to start. They have a 1% chance to make the playoffs. So Rivers said earlier today, he said, I think it was last night, I've been in worse situations. You know, I'm there. We still got a chance. So he's going to play. So it will be Rivers, which I'm not even sure if that's good news for you, buddy, because I think that shotgun-based run game makes it tough with JT. Right now in my weekly rankings, I have Jonathan Taylor as a fringe running back one. You know, I do think guys like RJ Harvey, maybe even Ashton Jeanty, you know, project better than Jonathan Taylor, at least as well right now. Like, that is what it is. We're going to stick at running back for my biggest dilemma here. And this is, what do I do with Bucky Irving? Ray Garvin, I'll tell you what, man, I was so excited to get Bucky Irving back off IR on this one team that has been a 2 seed in the playoffs. I got a first round bye all season long, but this team is very good. So excited to get Bucky Irving cherry back on top. We're still good. We made it to the fantasy championship. Bucky Irving's been starting, but he's not been giving you that production. He's just getting the between the 20s work, the empty calorie touches, not a lot of pass catching work, no goal line work. We're losing it to Sean Tucker. I got Travis Etienne. I got I've got Ramondre Stevenson. I'm thinking about playing Stevenson over Bucky Irving this week if there's no Trayvon Henderson. Is that crazy?
I don't think so. And I don't know what this Tampa. Here's a little preview for our show that we're going to do next week. Newsflash, Matt. It took 17 weeks, but this ain't the Liam Cohen offense. This Tampa Bay offense. Not. Is not the Liam Cohen offense. They get to the goal line. They give it to Sean Tucker a million times. Oh, that's okay. Maybe Bucky's involved in the receiving game. Nope. They don't even throw him the ball. Matt, you got a grinder. You got a grinder between the 20s running back who can break tackles, and they get to the money zone and they give it to Sean Tucker. This is this Bucks offense. We got to study this in the offseason, Matt. I hope this changes for Bucky, for Baker, for Buka. All the bees in Tampa Bay. This is not good.
Yeah, maybe Josh Grizzard, you know, goes deep into Liam Cohen's old office, into the filing cabinet, and finds that folder of all the sweet, sweet, sweet screenplays that they were calling for Bucky Irving last year. But if not, I think Bucky Irving is a low end running back too in your fantasy championship weekend, which stinks. So yeah, I think guys like Etienne. Guys like Ramondre Stevenson, they'll probably be my one and two backs this week over Bucky Irving, and maybe I'll pay for that. We'll see how it goes. All right, Ray, appreciate you, man. Happy to have you on the show here today. Merry Christmas, happy holidays to you and your family, and I hope that brisket turns out perfectly tender.
I appreciate you, Matt. I hope everybody else out there has a happy holiday as well. You, my friend, all the producers, it was a great show, and I'll just leave the people with this. Do not under any circumstances here in week 17, bench Ashton Jeanty. Make sure you lock him in. RB1 on the week versus the Giants as the Raiders blow their opportunity to get the number one pick, just so all of you complainers out there can feel good and take home your fantasy championship.
See, that's a man of the people right there. Ray Garvin, a man of the people. Not a man of the Raiders, a man of the people. You'll love to see it there. Appreciate you, Ray. Shout out. And, of course, Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everybody out there. But we've got another episode coming. Tomorrow, Justin Boone joins me for a special edition of the show as we give an early preview. Keep that in mind. It is early in the week, but we're going to preview the Sunday and Monday slate of games. A really fun fantasy film room segment on wide receivers. That's all going to happen right here live at 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. So your Christmas Eve parties can wait. Your presents can wait. Pop on YouTube instead and watch that show live at 5 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.